Welcome to Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth and close look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, the merchandising, and the global fandom phenomena that has shaped the landscape of science fiction for over five decades and counting. So step into our TARDIS and please enjoy our journey together here on Type 40. Welcome back to the show. And as ever, this week I'm joined by my companions and my friends. Firstly, it's Mr. Carl Wagner.
Hey, Dan, how's it going? This is going to be a fun episode. We got a lot to talk about because we're covering Comic-Con.
Oh, Comic-Con. Is it over yet? I feel like I'm only just barely starting to recover. And I couldn't have been further from Hall H myself. How about you?
Oh, I wish I could have been there, but hey, at least we are in the technological age where we get to see everything that's happening, and we're going to be talking a lot about that today, Dan. I am very excited, but you know, we got other people in the TARDIS, Dan. Do you know this guy who's joined us in the TARDIS?
Looks familiar, but it needs to take that hood down first.
You guys like my t-shirt? I've actually transformed. My t-shirt says, "Let Zygons be Zygons."
I'd know that voice anywhere. It's Mr. Norman Seelau.
That's me. I'm really excited to be here and talk about San Diego Comic-Con because there is a lot that dropped during San Diego Comic-Con week. And you're right, Dan. There's so much to get to, and there's so many reveals, and I think it's still going on. That's the one thing about conventions that you know, they never really kind of ramp down. They only ramp up, right?
And to think that Doctor Who was first day. That panel was the very first day to start it all off. I was exhausted just trying to keep up with the news.
Yeah, it was a busy day that first day of Comic-Con, Norman. You had Doctor Who, there was a little Lucasfilm announcement, and then Jodi was everywhere at Comic-Con.
Well, the nice thing is that it's nice that Doctor Who was able to set the tone again for that week. And I think that it's very indicative of the success of Jodie Whittaker's upcoming premiere that there was a lot of support for her and that they gave her a couple features because they didn't just have her walk on stage. They did like this little bitty, well, we'll get into it later. You know, we'll talk about all that later.
So much to talk about. But before that, should we tell everybody about about our podcast and where they can find us all on the Fandom Podcast Network and out there in social media, everybody?
I think that's a good idea because it's a pretty good fixed point in time and we don't want to mess with those, Dan. So if you don't mind, I will take care of a little business here. Of course, you can find Type 40 as well as all the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network on our homepage that hosts our master feed. That is fpnet.podbean.com. If you don't have a computer and you work through a mobile device, download the Podbean app and just search Fandom Podcast Network on the Podbean app. You can find Type 40 there as well. Of course, we're also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play for you Android device users. Just search the Fandom Podcast Network. You can find us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and this Type 40 show in particular at Type 40 Doctor Who, and that is Type, T-Y-P-E, 40-D-R-W-H-O. Of course, on Facebook, you can find the main Fandom Podcast Network Facebook page, as well as the Type 40 group, Type 40, a Doctor Who fandom. And again, that is TYPE40. And if you look in the notes for this show, you'll be able to find a link for it as well. And you can also email us if you'd like to give us some input on the show. You can email us at Type40DoctorWho@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at Type40DoctorWho. Norman, where can people find you on the social media?
You can find me on Twitter at Starfighter1701 and on Instagram at SoCalSwordFighter.
Of course, I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW and on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Get me a 13th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver yesterday, please. And finally, Dan, where can people find you on social media?
Yeah, I haven't got the screwdriver yet, but you can find me. I'm on Instagram at DanHadley_. Bit sparse on pictures there at the moment, but I'm working on it. And come and find me on Facebook. I'm in the Type 40 Facebook group, active there every day. And if your interests stray outside of the time vortex, imagine that, you can also find me on the Spacebook group, which is the home for all other out there entertainment Star Wars, Star Trek, comics, all that sort of thing. We get stuck deep into all that in there. So that Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah. And of course, too, if you need your Type 40 gear, your brand new Type 40 gear, visit our TeePublic store at teepublic.com, where you can find not only Type 40 gear, but all great gear for any of the shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Again, just go to teepublic.com and search Fandom Podcast Network. It'll take you to our storefront. You can get shirts, you can get hoodies, you can be like Jody and take your hood down. You got mugs, you got iPhone cases, pillows, you name it, it's there. And just so you know, any proceeds that come from that store, they go right back into the Fandom Podcast Network so we can bring you the best podcast possible. And finally, you know, leave us reviews on iTunes. We love to hear that we're doing a great job and you like what we're doing. We also, you know, if you have some criticisms or suggestions, leave us information there. We love iTunes reviews. If you leave it there, we'll be glad to read it on the air as well. But you know what? We've got a huge show to talk about. So, Dan, I'm going to throw it back to you because we get to talk about Comic-Con now.
Oh, well, before Comic-Con itself, there was the teaser. We haven't spoken about new Doctor Who since before that. And we had a little competition, didn't we, between the three of us to try and work out how long that teaser was going to last. Do you remember? The one went out on World Cup final day. And none of us, were very far away, were we? It was short. It was very short on the Doctor, even more so because she only appeared at the very, very end and didn't say or particularly do anything. But what were your feelings about that, guys, when it finally dropped? Because we all saw it at the same time. Was that as exciting for you as it was for everybody else?
Well, you know, I was talking about this with some other people and they were interested. They saw it. I think because everyone was really kind of like watching the World Cup, right? You know, that was dominating everyone's TV and media feeds. And they had some questions. And I think the three of us are all from an age where teasers were teasers. They tease you, right? They don't, in like a 30-second teaser or a 40-second teaser isn't supposed to tell you the entirety of the story. But I think that's sometimes lost on today's audience because of the binge-watching nature of how people consume content. So as many pros as I think that there were levied against the teaser, there were so many cons also because they're like, who's this? Who's that? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? Why didn't you? You know, I'm like, guys, relax. This is supposed to get you interested. So
yeah, I think that there are different kinds of people and different mindsets. And some people, particularly creative minded people, which in general, I think Doctor Who fans are quite creatively minded. I certainly am. I think you guys probably are too, but not everybody is. And some people are quite literal about everything they see. And so, you know, presented with something, none of that footage is going to be in the series, but there was lightning and things going off everywhere. And of course the World Cup coverage itself was being intercut into it. And I was seeing questions like, is this part of continuity? Is the Doctor moving like the Flash now? Is she, has she got a new special power? You know, and I did, I mean, I laughed too. But then I thought, well, hang on, you know, some people just, they see and they are very literal about everything they see and assume it's part of the show rather than a bit of sensation to stir things up for us. And of course it was so close to Comic-Con. It was days later before they hit us with some actual footage from the actual show, and not everybody was moving. There was people running, but they certainly weren't running as fast as the Flash, just normal running, Doctor Who style running. And there was corridors and there was flashes of light and lots of this kind of things that were the same but different. Yes, I mean, none of us were in Hall H. And before all the whoops and the squee at the panel. But it was quite an anxious wait. I think I was plugged into social media for a good hour, probably before the panel even kicked off. And of course, there's this how can I put this? It's kind of like a simulcast, isn't it? They call it where things drop at the same time all over the world. I think that's the official term. So as it was all the doors were closing in the hall itself, That was quite a strange, that was quite a strange feeling. What would we hear? When would we hear it? But of course, we turns out we did get that trailer at the exact same time as even the people in Hall H. And I mean, so the obvious question is, guys, what did you think? What stood out? What was resonating with you about what was seen there? And where do you think it points our way for the immediate future?
Well, I know for me, and this is Norman, I think you'll agree with me on this, and because you have a little more experience, I think Dan does. San Diego Comic-Con is one of the most frustrating cons for fandom because they have such strict rules about how social media is able to drop things and what can be dropped and what can't be dropped. So we weren't really sure going into San Diego Comic-Con when we would see the Doctor Who trailer, if we would even see the Doctor Who trailer. So I was shocked with how much news and how fast things were coming out right after the panel, and I thought that was great. And I know seeing that first that teaser trailer, which I loved, and because it did introduce us more to the new companions than it really did the Doctor, and I think that was great what was about that teaser trailer. But the actual trailer, I mean, it just everything you're just sitting there absorbing it in, and it really felt like a fresh start for Doctor Who. It felt like we are definitely in a new direction, a new era, and I could feel excitement and something that I haven't had for a while with the Moffat run was that sense of what's coming next, what's going to be happening, what direction are we going in? And I think it's something that's been so desperately needed to return to Who, and I'm just, I can feel like it's a regeneration for myself with Doctor Who. I mean, I love that last Capaldi season, but just, I feel like we're stepping into the unknown again, Norman.
Well, I think that's fair to say, and one of the things that happens with Comic-Con and the way that I think that the media has been kind of kept under close, like lock and key, I mean, we do know that there are instances where things were leaked and things are continuing to be leaked, and the BBC has been very diligent about finding the leaks and locking them down. Because I think that when you look at what has been released from the teaser to the trailer to the marketing campaign to the artwork to the wallpapers, all of this campaign has been very well thought out. And when you put things out of context or out of order, the work that goes behind a very diligently scheduled marketing campaign kind of goes by the wayside, and it doesn't allow fans to appreciate the context as it is supposed to be consumed and understood. That being said, this is the internet, and if you aren't watchdogging all of your information, and these leaks could be coming from inside because some people just, they don't really think about it that way. You know, that's what happens, and then it goes out there and it becomes viral, and then things become, you know, an issue. But I think that for most people who want to stay spoiler free, I think they're trying to take the information as it comes. You're right. What we did see in Hall H, the trailer was very indicative of a fresh start. It had a completely different feel. I think when people really look at things from a production and directorial standpoint, you know that these styles are different. You know, the style from Capaldi's era or Moffat's era, to be fair, and this new era, just different. You can feel it the same way that you felt the shift between the Russell T. Davies era and the Stephen Moffat era. And that's great about Doctor Who. There are so many different ways to appreciate the fandom because there are so many different flavors. I mean, up to a point, we're going to get like ice cream. It's going to be 31 flavors of Doctor Who, right? So, but I think that it was very exciting to see, and there's a lot of content that was released, and I think that everyone kind of has to take it in stride and see where it goes.
I've never heard that expression, watchdogging, before. I like that. I'm going to use that. I'm going to take that from there. The thing that hit me afterwards is when you take a step back and watch it for a second and then a third time, maybe even a fourth or fifth, naming no names. But if you watch it over and over, you do see that there's actually not a great deal there of any coherence. There's a lot of fast-cut images of things that are, as you just said, Norm, kind of new spins on things that we know on certain calling cards. And within I think it's fair to say that although people were pleased to see it, there was a little bit of a backlash when people took stock. But the entire, I mean, did either of you get goose pimples? I must admit I did.
Oh yeah, most definitely. It was one of those things. It's like, I can't wait till October. I need this yesterday in my life.
It had that magic, didn't it? It had that instant connection, that Doctor Who buzz, I suppose you could call it. And I mean, the trick to it, I think the saving grace for me, yeah, because the imagery was all great and it did look really slick. And there was a couple of visual flourishes where you think, what did that look a little bit like this, a little bit like that? But for me, it was that monologue of the Doctor describing her new experience. It's clearly quite, it must be from the first episode, and the speech about, would you be my best friends? It's all new to her, new worlds, new faces, all that sort of thing, which is a really sort of, I wouldn't call it a speech, but it's certainly a monologue. It felt very, very personal and very, very Doctor Who. Again, some people have taken exception to the will you be my best friends line, which to me, okay, you can't imagine some doctors saying that, but there are definitely plenty of doctors who would say that, particularly Matt Smith's. And I hadn't got a problem with any of it at all. I thought it was quite beautifully done. And obviously there's still so much to see. It was the novelty of, after just a few static images, of seeing them, seeing the Doctor moving, seeing a different expression on her face, curiosity, joy, and fear. Of course, she seems to wake up gasping for breath. It's good stuff. I'm feeling it after, despite what I said a couple of weeks ago, I'm feeling it. And, so shortly we're going to get to meet all these new characters. But I also felt at Comic-Con, when the main panel was put onto social media, at first in chunks, then the whole thing, that we really got a feel for the actors themselves individually and the chemistry that they've built up over the last 9 months, is it, they've been working together? Maybe not that long. We've got, there was Jodie Whittaker herself, of course, and Tosin Cole, Mandip Gill. And we've got a little look at Bradley Walsh in action. You guys might not be familiar at all with Bradley Walsh, but he's a big figure on television in this country. He's on daily, hosting game shows and regularly entertainment shows. So we're used to his antics. That video of him coming in and out of the porter cabin, whether Winnebago, whatever you want to call it, that's pretty much what he's like all the time. And it was great as well to see Chris Chibnall animated and engaged, and to meet this new executive producer, Matt Strevens. That, because this, the familiarity with these people, not just the actors, but particularly the showrunner, it is important to fans, isn't it? To see and get a feel, and you don't expect them to all be Doctor Who experts. But it's just nice if you get an inkling of the connection that they formed and if it meets with ours. What did you think about the cast, guys? And was Chris Chibnall, because you haven't seen much of his work, have you? I mean, was he what you were expecting? Did you like what he had to say?
You know, I liked seeing all the different actors because for me, aside from Jodie Whittaker, and knowing her work, you know, on Broadchurch, and I haven't gotten back yet to her Black Mirror episode, but I'm going to have to catch up with that. I like jumping into this completely new cast and new team because that allows me to, I guess, imprint on them and become a fan of their work specifically, as opposed to bringing in my preconceptions of who they are and what they have done into the show. A lot of people do that with their fandoms, and I think that actually does escalate from even the doctors, from doctor to companion to doctor to companion to the team that works with these doctors and companions. That tends to hit almost a critical mass at times, and I think that sometimes is unfair to fandoms because you're bringing in so much expectation from previous to the next step. So for me, seeing all these different fresh faces is very exciting because I don't know what to expect from anybody. And they're going to have to sell me on the validity and the authenticity of their characters. Their first steps on the show are going to be really important because that's who I'm going to believe that they are. So if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And I think that it doesn't really matter. I mean, people talk about it. And who was it? Because the host was asking, obviously, various questions. And then we got a few from the floor, didn't we, from the fans and things like that. But the general questions were quite broad. There was nothing... I mean, okay, they can't say too much. We know how it goes by now. Everything's a secret. And you can see how frustrating that was on their faces.
Well, I think that Kyle has a little bit more experience with some of the stars than I do, because you're a little bit more, I guess, a little bit more exposed to Jodie Whittaker, or have been, Kyle?
Yeah, well, I obviously, Attack the Block was my first introduction to Jodie Whittaker, and I loved her character in that. And then I was all in on Broadchurch when that started coming out on the BBC because of David Tennant at the time. But what I, and also Arthur Darvill in that show as well. But I was very much drawn to Jodie Whittaker when I watched Broadchurch. I thought she was probably the standout performance in that show, especially in the first season. Just as this grieving mother, everything she was having to deal with, and she covered the whole emotional range. And of course, that was really my big exposure to Chris Chibnall being fully in charge of a show. I know he had done several episodes of Torchwood that were kind of a mixed bag, but seeing what he was able to do, and especially how he is able to get such emotional responses out of his actors and their portrayal through Broadchurch was incredibly well done. And I would definitely say anybody who is kind of curious about Jodie or Chris Chibnall and they're not quite familiar with their work yet, go watch that, at least that first season of Broadchurch, because I think that is a very good indicator of at least seeing how he develops his characters and the different angles he takes with this. But I'm just so excited for all of this. And one of the things that I'm liking about the early trailers and what we've seen is we're seeing the companions, but we still really haven't been given a full feel for the companions yet. And I think that's a good thing because I don't really want to get that reveal until the show is actually started. And because we have three companions this time around. And I've also noticed, and because you talked about it a little bit earlier, where the doctor's asking them to be her best friends. That's something even Chris Chibnall said in interviews. He's trying to get away from the word companions right now. It's about them being friends. And I think that's a plot point for the upcoming, at least the first season with Jodie. And I was curious if you've kind of noticed that, Norman.
I think that's, yeah. I mean, so going back to your original question, Dan, before we move on, Chris Chibnall did say in his interviews that he wants to make a complete break, clean, fresh start where obviously fans that know Doctor Who will be able to continue the experience, but new people will be able to start without having all of the baggage and expectation of having to know all of this minutia, companions, TARDIS, Type 40, you know, what TARDIS stands for, this, that, and the other thing, because that's a lot to bring in expectation-wise for a fan just to be able to enjoy something that's just entertainment. So if he's going that route and if he's going to do that, then why not kind of take a different spin on certain things? I mean, what really does the word companion mean? That's more of a, I guess that's more of an affectation that the fans throw on the doctor's friends, right?
And it sort of saddles a character because I think what came over really loudly on that panel was, that these guys are jobbing actors and they go for the job and they give their best audition. Obviously, some series are more high profile than others, and they hope for the best. And when they get the job, they work at a connection with that character. And I suppose having it labelled as some sort as the companion, the this, the that, it might overburden what is really just another character, just another job, something to connect to, and a truth to find, and a person to bring out of yourself in the performance. I thought that Mandip Gill and Tosin Cole, the looks on their faces as they were staring out into Hall H, I don't know what that looks like. I would imagine it looks cavernous and loud and really very intense. And the both of them looked like deer caught in the headlights a little bit. I thought both of them were very charming. Tosin Cole genuinely had me laughing at the various, just his body language, the things that he was saying and how that he was saying them. And, you know, like, hello, Mom, I'm on the telly and all that sort of thing. You know, just very everyday things. I think they were both being very, very natural and saying so little about their characters, again, must be very frustrating. I noticed at one point Mandip Gill happened to drop out that Yaz was from Sheffield too. And apparently Chris Chibnall didn't even want that getting out. And that was pretty much all that was said. We still know nothing really about Tosin's character. And so it was, I think maybe it's probably for the audience, it's been a long, long wait. And it's been, you know, with very little being said. And it's had a kind of, it's had a distancing effect. When are we going to see something? And I think for the cast in Cardiff, you know, they've been shooting it all over the world, but mostly in Cardiff and only able to talk about it to a few dozen other people. Can you imagine how it must get into a sort of pressure cooker kind of situation? And not only must it really bond people together, fellow actors and creatives, but it must at some point, you know, the relief of just getting to make contact with the audience in any way, shape or form, even if you can't say anything, it must have been, they must have got a lot of something on a personal level out of that, about making that connection, making eye contact, seeing the cosplay and just being able to wave at people. Did you think it was the kind of event that they will remember for the rest of their lives too?
No, I have to believe so. I mean, you know, again, with some of these other younger actors who have never been exposed, I mean, I think, didn't Tosin say that this is like his first big job?
I think so, yeah. He's been doing work with a youth theatre group. Mm-hmm. And one of his instructors, and you're like this, Norm, mm-hmm. is the lovely Louise Jameson.
Oh, really? Okay.
The pictures all over his Instagram. I think, yes, you can follow him on Instagram. Lots of pictures of him with Louise and various other students and instructors, a couple of which, you know, they're relatively well-known faces on British television.
I mean, think about it this way. I mean, if you're stepping onto the world stage, as it were, which basically San Diego Comic-Con is your introduction to the world, I think that, one, it must have been really difficult, like you said, for them to not say anything about their characters when they're always asked about their characters. You know, what can you tell us, this, that, and the other thing? They're like, well, I want to tell you, and I want to make a good impression by you, but I can't really do anything about it because my hands are tied. So.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Kyle?
I think that's one of the things for them, and it's got to be frustrating because you're so excited to talk about this project and this amazing thing you're doing, and you can't. And, you know, especially when you look at Chris Chibnall, he's very good about keeping secrets, especially when you consider Broadchurch and how that nobody really saw the ending coming that Broadchurch had, especially going back again to season one. So he's very good at this. He's very similar to J.J. Abrams in that top secret kind of respect. And I know Norman's familiar with what J.J. Abrams is like, but J.J. Abrams, I mean, when he was making the original Star Trek film with Zachary Quinto and everything, like, he had the actors walking through blacked out tunnels so people couldn't see them in costume, and they'd get into a blacked out vehicle to take them out to the set because he didn't want anything getting out. But it's so exciting, and I'm very glad that they're keeping this mystery, because I think it's going to make everybody that more excited and get more eyes onto the Doctor when the new season starts in October.
Well, something else did get out, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. That one little photograph are you talking about, sir?
Oh, no, I was... Oh, we can talk about that too, but I was thinking about that that one little bit of the production that they were allowed to bring with them, which you could, if Jodie was had it in her bum bag, the new Sonic screwdriver.
Oh, I think Norman fell in love with that instantaneously, didn't you, Norman?
What are we talking about? Okay, so Dan, you and I come from an era of Doctor Who, or we have enjoyed an era of Doctor Who, the classic era, where certain props weren't really as big of a focus, I guess, as they are now. Obviously, the TARDIS was, K-9 was, certain things were. But now, the sonic screwdriver has become almost as synonymous with the Doctor as the lightsaber has with the Jedi. So is this, I mean, I love seeing the new sonic screwdriver, and we're not going to get, I don't think that it does us any good or the fandom any good to focus on some of the negativity that has come from that reveal. Because I think, first of all, for me, I think that it is immature and baseless and something that I think drives a lot of sexism towards the character. And I think that is absolutely an unfair thing. That being said, I do love seeing this new sonic screwdriver. I do love seeing the fact that in this tight marketing campaign reveal, you're seeing things out of context that are now starting to gel together with the organicness of the design, the alien quality of the designs, from all this crystalline structure and the themes to the poster or the one-shot teaser that was released with Jodie holding the sonic screwdriver with, again, more crystalline and colorful aesthetic. So everything seems to be a bit more alien, going kind of like back to Christopher Eccleston's and David Tennant's TARDIS skin, the way it was like just really alien and organic feeling, as opposed to how it evolved more technologically. So, and yes, I'm trying to like make sure that I get both of them on order because there are so many versions that are being released. I think the sonic screwdriver is fantastic. I just don't want it to be a crutch. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you couldn't get more different from the last design, which I thought was the closest to a magic wand the sonic screwdriver's ever got, and very physically large. This looks like something. This looks like a tool, like an accessory that somebody could carry about their person pretty inconspicuously. And there just seems to be the one glowing light at the front rather than anything that revolves. The design is, again, if you saw this in somebody's hand, you wouldn't necessarily notice how bizarre it was until you got up close. It seems to be sort of twisted metal. And of course, the light's now amber rather than the traditional blue, which I would imagine, I mean, from the little bits that we saw in the trailer, that could be part of the plot too. Maybe it's connected to the TARDIS, which of course we've had a couple of times before. Maybe it won't be. Maybe this is an entirely different origin for this device. And yeah, I think you're right. When it starts to become a crutch in the plot, then we have a serious problem. It lays the writers open to complacency, and nobody wants that. And you know, I get the impression that Stephen Moffat got a little bored with it. But the thing is, you know, and of course, back in the 80s, they completely destroyed it, which I'm not really sure you need to go that far. You throw the baby out with the bathwater. But there's no reason why it has to be in every single episode. You know, we can. I've left my own house keys in the pockets of jackets I've left elsewhere and things like that before now. So it's the kind of thing you could quite easily just forget not to take with you if you were bounding out of the TARDIS because of some pressing alien engagement on the other side of the doors. So yeah, I think as ever with Doctor Who, the clue to managing this element is in writing it in a sensitive way, whereby, you know, it's whether it's there or not isn't a particularly big deal. But of course, selling toys is a serious business, and you know, I think they've got three sales here, possibly more. Would you buy one to keep boxed and one to play with, Norm?
Oh, gosh. pass. Kyle?
I would probably have one that I would open, but I would probably put it on display after, especially Norman showed us a beautiful display case for Sonic screwdrivers. You know, here is my thing with the Sonic, guys, and I'm curious to see if you kind of think this. I think especially towards the end of Russell's run, and especially through the Moffat run, the Sonic kind of became a cheap out for some things. And they almost made the Sonic too powerful. And I actually kind of like what they did with Capaldi's Doctor and the fact that they actually... Now, I wasn't a big fan of the Sonic sunglasses, but they at least wrote it in a way in the story that he needed them for a reason. But I think they kind of were just... At that point, like you said, Dan, Moffat was getting bored with the Sonic. I love this new design of the Sonic. I love the fact that the curvature feels like it looks like it's perfectly fitting in the hand, and I love how it's a smaller design, like you guys talked about, more not as conspicuous, and I really think the look of it is going to be part of the storyline of what's happening in this season of Doctor Who, because it does have a little bit more of an alien look. It's got the first time we've had a yellow crystal inside, or an amber type crystal, so I'm very excited for that. I mean, it's everything. Like Norm said, all the pieces are coming together beautifully.
One last thing about the Sonic, and I agree with both of you guys on this, is and if you watch the Day of the Doctor, one of the funniest things is how John Hurt's War Doctor kind of dismisses he kind of criticizes both other doctors for using it. It's like, what are you pointing at? Like, why are you using it? Like, you know, what are you going to do with those sonic screwdrivers to a Zygon? Like, what? Why are you using that? You know, this is supposed to open up. I mean, it was just one of those things where kind of like he was saying what everyone else was thinking. Like, bottom line is that you don't want the sonic screwdriver to become Roger Moore's James Bond Q branch go-to.
No.
Right?
No. I mean, of all the things... Nobody would ever want, don't think Doctor Who's ever in any danger of turning into a standard sort of detective style show or adventure style show. But as long as, and I like the fact that it's still got its limits, that it doesn't work on wood famously. And there are other things that it can't do. I think as long as it never crosses that line, it becomes a signature item rather than that magic wand, then we'll be on familiar and safe ground. I think people want it there. People like it there. When the Capaldi Doctor was using the Sonic sunglasses, I think as amusing as that was for a little while, and a very little while, the question on everybody's lips is, when's he going to get the Sonic screwdriver back? Obviously, it's been back a while now. It's all going to be back again. I can't wait to see it in action. I can't wait to get hold of my own and, maybe even do a spot of cosplay. Who knows? I was thinking about the entire Comic-Con event. It was so, so intense afterwards. And you'd think that would be enough, but the cast, they hung around for the entire time. Jodie herself turned up again on a catwalk parade. Did either of you see that?
Oh, yes.
Kyle, did you catch that?
Oh, love that. I'm just going to say this. As far as I'm concerned, and I've had this conversation with Norman, Jodie Whittaker was the hero of Comic-Con. She owned Comic-Con. She was all over social media making great little videos. And then she shows up at the Her Universe fashion show. And for those of you who might not be familiar, Her Universe is the brand of fandom clothing that Ashley Eckstein, who does the voice of Ahsoka Tano on Star Wars The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, founded and created, and has become a incredibly popular line of clothing in fandom. And Ashley has done an amazing job building this brand. One of the things she's always preached with it is equality and everything that's good about fandom. And Jodie showed up kind of unannounced, and all of a sudden it was apparently the story is that Ashley's like, we've got to get her on stage. So they worked it out very, very short notice and got Jodie Whittaker up on stage, and she was just... And then Ashley kept her on stage to interview her, and it just came off brilliantly and was just one of those things that I think it was a great move in the aspect, and I don't even think they were thinking about that, but it opened up a lot of people's eyes who maybe weren't quite sure what was going on with Doctor Who to see her on the stage, because there was a lot of Star Wars fans at that event, obviously, because of Ashley Eckstein's ties to Clone Wars and everything Star Wars. So it, I think it opened up a whole new set of eyes to what's coming in Doctor Who, and I think it's going to do nothing but help the transition into the 13th Doctor. I'm very, very excited about that. And she had a lot of cute videos with her and the her castmates all over social media as well. It was great.
I'd never heard of her universe before, so I didn't know it was a brand. I thought it was like a perhaps a regular thing at Comic-Con where they would get all items of merchandise out, anything that could be worn. So all that is completely new to me. It's obviously a lot bigger deal than I was aware, but I watched that. I mean, I admire cosplay enormously, and obviously as a designer, you know, I see things, I know whether I like them or not, but I know nothing about clothing and fashion and things like that. Watching that clip where the announcer was the person you were just talking about, Kyle.
She was one of them. She was the one that interviewed Ashley up on stage. The blonde hair, had the dress on.
Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah. And when she said that there's somebody we're going to bring out, and out strode Jodie Whittaker with the hood down. I mean, for everything we've spoken about this couple of shows back, for all my trepidation about this character, and even this actress who I like in this role, I can say, hand on heart, watching that, it was absolutely electrifying. I don't know how many people were there in that particular hall, but that was a goose pimple moment for me, definitely. And when she brought the hood back and dropped the sonic, you know, completely sort of straight-faced, that was a beautiful Doctor Who moment. And for just there and then explaining what I gather, even Chris Chibnall was even watching and listening to every word then. Did you hear her describe the coat, Norm?
Yeah, what the thing is with that particular fashion show, I think that one of the great things about what happened there was Jodie, I think, being a little bit more accepted over time by just a larger variety of fans, because now Ashley is the voice of Ahsoka Tano. Yeah, Kyle?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Cause forgive me. I know probably a lot of fans, including Matt Clifton's like, why don't you know that, Norm? Right. But I'm not as familiar with it as some. I think that it's great that she was able to display the cosplay and the clothing line for not just the Doctor Who audience, but for the Star Wars audience as well, because we do get a lot of crossover. So it's nice to see that all this merchandise is being available towards a completely different segment now of the fandom. And I think that's really important, because one of the things that I think that a lot of fans have kind of brought from previous experiences, like, why don't we get the cosplay for gender swapping? And because it'll be really interesting now to see men cosplay 13 as opposed to women cosplaying 10 and 11 and sometimes even 4. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see that. I think that this whole line of merchandising is just going to open up a lot of access to a lot of fans that never really had the proper ability to inhabit the character now that she's a woman.
I think there's always a certain amount of hyperbole spoken at these events, and inevitably people latch onto these things on social media, and, you know, sometimes just in conversation. And Jodie said how anybody can cosplay this, and, you know, a man or a woman would wear this. Well, you know, a man or a woman could definitely cosplay the 13th Doctor without a question. Had the 13th Doctor not been wearing that coat, that outfit, I don't think a man would wear any of that myself. But again, that's who knows? I mean, maybe Doctor Who has set trends before. I'm looking back. Was anybody wearing tweed before Matt Smith? Was anybody wearing bow ties? I can't remember. So, but maybe this time next year, now, a lot of guys will be wearing those. What are those trousers called that cut off at the ankle, Carl? Do you know?
Those are what, kind of capri pants?
Yeah, capri pants kind of as a style. Yeah. So I don't know about how many guys are going to be wearing capri pants, but
I'll do it.
Are we? Boy, you're used to wearing kilts. That's yeah. Nothing to you, isn't it?
That's true. Fair point.
get a plug in for the Blood of Kings on the Fandom Podcast Network.
You know, it's funny. Before we jump forward a little bit here, there's a note that I think it could take an entire show to talk about. You say, how mainstream is Comic-Con anyway in both the UK and the USA? Comic-Con, at least for the US fans, it is like a mind-bending phenomenon. When Comic-Con tickets go on sale, literally, I don't know, like the ping level on servers. Yeah, the ping level on servers, they go haywire because you have to go into a queue and you have to wait and actually see if you get what your allotted limit of two tickets per.
It's two or three. It's in what's happened, especially in about the last, what do you think, Norman? I would say 10 to 15 years with Comic-Con. It's not. It's so morphed into what it is now, because Comic-Con was just that. It was comics, and it became, mm-hmm. I think, maybe about the time Marvel started, Norman, when Marvel brought Iron Man to Comic-Con.
It started really with the surge really started with Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Because Lord of the Rings gave a lot of access to the genre and the geek culture fandom that no other genre really allowed people access to, because Lord of the Rings legitimized geek as being cool, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think, pick it, because I know a lot of the Lord of the Rings cast went to that Comic-Con while it was filming, and then the Hollywood kind of saw, well, this is a great way to market to these people. And then I think the big one, though, was when Marvel brought the original Iron Man to Hall H, because I remember everybody was trying to get a hold of that Iron Man footage that was in Hall H, because that was when, if it was aired in Hall H, it stayed in Hall H. It was like Vegas.
Yeah, it used to be Ballroom 20, and then Ballroom 20 couldn't hold the Lord of the Rings audience, so they actually expanded. Hall H wasn't originally there. You know, that was something that was like built out in and they can't build out anymore because they can't build wider and they can't build into the into the water. So yeah,
because there is talk of the moving location, I hear.
There's always talk about that, but the thing is that with the contracts that they have with the city of San Diego, I do believe that they do that in 10-year periods, and I'm sure that it's escalated since the last time I was there, which was probably about 6 or 7 years ago. The annual, or at least the weekend revenue, or the Comic-Con revenue, is escalated to somewhere around 45 to 50 million, you know, for that weekend for the city.
Okay.
In business. So sure, it'd be great for them to get it to Las Vegas, but there is no way that San Diego is not going to put up a fight for it. There's just way too much revenue for hotels and businesses and restaurants, you know, taxis, all that kind of service industry work. It's too much money.
And it's something that's fairly high profile all over America, you know, with the Entertainment Weekly cover. Everybody is aware that it's going on, would you say?
Well, easily. It's all over here in the States. The Entertainment Weekly Comic-Con issue, that's one of the biggest issues Entertainment Weekly puts out a year. There's about four or five they have that are huge. Their Oscar issue, their summer movie preview issue, their fall TV issue, and their Comic-Con issue. They're all double-sized. So for Jody to make the cover on that, and, you know, it's a blessing in disguise, and I talked about this on this week's episode of Culture Clash. This was a very different Comic-Con in the aspect you did not have a Marvel movie there. You did not have a Star Wars movie there. And HBO had no presence at Comic-Con, which really opened up the door to a lot of new things. And I think because of all the excitement and with Jodie being the 13th Doctor, I think Comic-Con really did put their main focus on Doctor Who to be the major presentation day one out of the gate for Comic-Con is a pretty big deal. The only other thing that really is the Saturday, which this year went to Aquaman. But if you talk to most people, I think most people agree the three biggest pieces of news that were coming out of Comic-Con were the Star Wars Clone Wars Season 7 coming, the Aquaman trailer, and Jodie Whittaker's and the Doctor Who panel. And, you know, Jodie, like you said, Jodie did a couple other panels. She did the Sci-Fi Women Who Kick Ass panel, which had a lot of people on it. Unfortunately, that has not made its way out onto the web as of yet. And like I said, she was just everywhere. And it was just this was Doctor Who's Comic-Con. Without a doubt.
So do you feel then, Kyle, that Doctor Who really belongs on this stage as a brand? Did the BBC deliver after keeping everything locked down for so long?
Oh, I think Doctor Who's belonged on this stage for a while. Norman, I think you can agree with me. by the end of Tennant's run, even by the middle of Tennant's run, Doctor Who belonged on the Comic-Con stage.
Oh, I think so. You know, there's one point in time, and I think, Dan, I think we were talking about this before on a previous show, where when you talked about Doctor Who, you were trying to find fans that would connect with you because Doctor Who was, it wasn't the center stage fandom like Star Wars was or Star Trek was. It was very niche because it's coming from Great Britain and because it has to be imported here to the United States in certain ways. But now, because of the popularity of the show and the accessibility of it being delivered by these very good-looking and very charismatic actors like David Tennant and Matt Smith, and even, you know, to some degree, Peter Capaldi, in the last 10 to 15 years, Doctor Who has become very accessible and very easy to walk around in that skin, so to speak, as a fan, without the kind of sideways glances that you used to get before when you walked across your college campus wearing a 14-foot scarf. Just saying. So, but nowadays, I could have, if I did that on a college campus, I think people would be like, "Where'd you get that?" As opposed to, "Why are you wearing that?" Or, forget about that party invite that I gave you last night. You know, there's a huge cultural difference, and I think that is because the way that Doctor Who has been absorbed by popular culture, popular media and popular pop culture, it's become accepted globally as something that is far beyond its roots.
Far beyond its roots as a national treasure and now an international treasure. Something literally for everybody.
Yeah, fair to say. Mm-hmm.
And well, given that, listening to the panel, one of the various things that they were allowed to talk about was their own connections to Doctor Who. And I think you said earlier on, Norm, that about it being a fresh start, a bit of a jumping on point. Mm-hmm. And they did say, you know, kind of go out into the general public and recruit people to watch this show that maybe wouldn't have seen it before, or might have thought, "Oh, that's a geek interest show. That's not for me." See if we can sort of rally that next generation of Doctor Who viewers who've been waiting for this ideal opportunity and an entry point. And they were saying we should connect with that one person, just one person in each of our lives, and say, "Okay, now's the time." And I've been thinking about that a lot. I mean, have you got anybody in your day-to-day lives who you would, you're going to say, come October, we think we're pretty certain it's October, come October, say, it's starting, this is the date, this is the time, watch Doctor Who, you're going to love it. Is there anybody you're going to, you plan on recruiting, Kyle?
I've already done my recruiting. I've got several friends who, they were familiar with the Doctor, but really weren't on board and were asking me all kinds of questions after the Jodie Whittaker reveal, and I've just been selling it on them. I know of at least three or four people who are going to be jumping on when this series starts back up to see what everything is going on and what's going all about, and this is the perfect time to do it. We talked about it a little bit earlier with Chibnall saying he wants a fresh start, and I think this is a great time to bring in a whole new diversity and group into the Doctor Who fandom and really just see where it's going to take off, because I think it's, you know, we have Jodie, we have a fresh start where if you're a little familiar with Doctor Who, you're good, but I think really Chris Chibnall is going to make this first season so it's something so nobody feels truly lost in what's going on, and that you can step into Doctor Who fresh right now.
I think one of the beauties of Doctor Who is that it's geeky entertainment. But I think a lot of people, when they do find it, when they start watching it, it's not actually as geeky as they think it's going to be. I think perhaps the latter Stephen Moffat stories did lose that a little. You know, we spoke a little about that last time. But I get a lot of people asking about it who wouldn't normally, you know, they certainly wouldn't describe themselves as a geek. They probably don't watch Star Trek, would frown at those of us who get so excited counting down to a new Star Wars film or whatever. It seems to have that reach across. And that's maybe partly to do with its origins and the way that it seems to be able to reconnect with the family audience. It's one of those few programs that ideally that the entire family can sit down and watch together. But it does. I mean, I've been speaking to people in my Facebook groups and various friend circles, you know, and there are people who, you know, I could never find Doctor Who before. I could never connect to it. But, you know, my child is of the right age now. So, you know, I'm looking forward to this. I'm going to give it a go. Mm-hmm.
You know, what's funny is that San Diego Comic-Con, this is how big it is. One of my coworkers, actually someone who works in the same office as I do, they were watching all the Comic-Con coverage and he asked me, so tell me about Doctor Who, because it was a big deal. He would have never really have known about it if it weren't for the Comic-Con exposure. So now I have this, you know, this completely brand new fan. He's like, what do I need to know? And I gave him a couple of books, you know, just a couple of things to kind of brush up on. But I said, you know what, here's the great thing about the way that they're approaching it is that you don't really need to know a lot. Just watch it from the start. Enjoy it. If you have any questions, that's what the other fans are here for. But enjoy it for what it is. I don't want to like build up his expectations or fill his head with preconceptions. So it's going to be interesting to see a fresh fan. He's never seen a single episode of Doctor Who. A single episode. He's like, how long has this show been on? I was like, 55 years, give or take, with some pauses in between. So it'll be, and you know, he's like, well, I need something to watch with my, you know, with my wife. So I'm like, I think this is a good opportunity for the both of you. And I think that's really exciting to see.
I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I think if you're talking, because it's not like Star Trek, even though the casts have changed, the title of the show remains the same. The look of the show generally seems to be the same, but it isn't the same show. In many ways, you could break down, going right back to 63, you could break it down into maybe not 12, but certainly 10 individual series that just all happen to be titled Doctor Who, and some of them have got a greater sort of continuity with what's gone before than others. And obviously with what's coming in the autumn, they're boasting about the fact that there's no returning monsters, which I know some would be disappointed about, but I'm quite pleased about that. There's clearly this entirely new cast, entirely new production team. You know, this has to be the best jumping on point, maybe since, I was going to say 2010, but I certainly since 2005. I don't think I've got anybody I can recruit anymore, apart from my daughter. You know, she's already counting down the weeks, asking when. And so I've pestered too many people over too many years. But there's always those one or two people on social media who they know me as, I'm sure you get this, he's the Doctor Who guy. And I've been asked similar questions as you both have too. And the answer that I always give is, you don't need any foreknowledge. All you really need is 45, 50 minutes free in an evening, you know, ideally with the company and a drink at the side, and just reconnect with the inner child that I certainly have never left behind, you know, into my 40s. And you know, I credit Doctor Who with a lot of that. The show's brought a lot of joy into my life. And whilst I've got children of my own now, and seeing them discover it and find different things in it has been a great privilege. And they've got their own connections with it. You know, that's it's not just that show that Dad made us watch. And you know, I've got numerous friends as well who, you know, I think for a time it was just that show that my mate Dan was into. Whereas, you know, I know of at least two of them who, you know, would count it now as one of their favourite shows. And okay, there's a lot that's going to change about the show through the autumn, and the sad fact is that it may well lose some fans, but I can think of no reason why the next generation of Doctor Who fans shouldn't start boarding at this platform.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, Dan. And, you know, it's going to be, you're going to lose fans, but I think what you lose in fans is you're going to gain tenfold with new fans, because this is a whole new world opening up here. And it's in a very exciting time, and it's just time to, I think everybody to give it a chance and do what we need to do to accept this and enjoy this, because it's going to be amazing. I think it's a whole new energy, and it's going to be a whole new feel for Doctor Who that's going to be outstanding. So I think we've got a lot to talk about, and it's going to be a fun ride continuing here in Type 40.
Well, aside from discussing the Doctor Who fandom here on Type 40, we've got a wide variety of shows that you may also enjoy listening to on the Fandom Podcast Network. So please come back after this jump to hear our final thoughts on this week's podcast.
Hey, Kevin, I hear you're one of the Fandom Podcast Network's co-founders.
I heard the same rumor about you too, Kyle. Like the Three Musketeers, we would be incomplete without our third member and co-founder, Norman.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's an honor to be part of the Fandom Podcast Network with you two. Kyle, why don't you start us off and let everyone know what great shows we have on the network.
Absolutely. Starting with our flagship show on the network, we have Culture Clash, your weekly fandom news show covering everything, news, reviews, and whatever crazy things we can come up with. Of course, we also have Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with Tom Caldwell, Brandon Shematula, and Chris High. Kevin, what else do we have on the network?
Kyle, we also have Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. Also, if you're a hard rock music fan, I host the Hair Metal podcast as we rediscover the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. Norman, we're not done yet. What else have we got on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Well, Kevin, you and I co-host Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast covering all things Highlander. And I also co-host with you, Kevin, and Kyle, and other special guests, Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery, and the Orville podcast. But Kyle, last, and certainly not least, what are the other shows on the network?
Well, for all you movie fans out there, this podcast is for you. We have Couch Potato Theater, covering cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. And for you football fans, we have this show for you, The End Zone, giving you all the great mediocre fantasy football advice you can get and covering everything the NFL. And finally, you Doctor Who fans out there, we have Type 40, a Doctor Who fandom podcast. Now, Kevin, can you tell everyone how to find all these great programs on the Fandom Podcast Network?
Sure, Kyle. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at thefpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, and Google Play. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram under Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPodNetwork.
Also, please search Fandom Podcast Network on tpublic.com for our store, where you can find all our shows and their logos and great t-shirts and other fun items. Also, please search Fandom Podcast Network on iTunes and leave us a review.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and most importantly, enjoy your fandom.
And yes, well, after all that intensity of the San Diego Comic-Con has come and gone for another year, and there's no time or space quite like it in the pop culture calendar. And okay, who knows, next year maybe the TARDIS will pitch up again. You know, not even Marvel's there every year, but yeah, I think you're right, Kyle. And this year may well have been Doctor Who's year. It absolutely belongs on that stage, and you know, we all enjoyed watching it unfold and unwrap, and we hope that you did too. I've been Dan Hadley, and on behalf of my co-hosts, Kyle Wagner and Norman C. Lau, I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and join us next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast.